I am excited to welcome you to another week of our 4.5 year verse-by-verse journey through all of God's inspired word, and invite you to turn with me to Genesis chapter 45, verse 21, where we can resume the great story of Joseph's and Pharaoh's invitation to Jacob and his family to immigrate to Egypt. This is God's way of putting the growing family of Israel into a bit of a hothouse or an incubator to keep them safe for the really big growth spurt that this ethnic group is going to experience. This is the 400 plus year period that Abraham was warned about. God had said to Abraham, this land here, Canaan, is going to belong to your seed, to your multiplied seed, and they will inherit it after the sins of the Amorites have reached their peak. The way it's expressed at the time is, the sins of the Amorites has not yet come to fruition, to completion. It's going to be exactly 430 years. Israel will be growing at leaps and bounds inside the boundaries of the land of Egypt, while the Amorites kind of implode with their sin. We've already seen that it's heading down that path. The richest zone in Canaan, that'd be the five cities of the plain, have already, four of them, been annihilated because there wasn't even 10 people that were righteous in them. And so that's just going to get worse and worse over the next several centuries. And Israel will be elsewhere. Now, they'll have their own problems, and we'll talk about some of that as we're looking at the book of Exodus later. But it will be better than being in Canaan during this upcoming period of time. So in Genesis 45, 21, it says, the sons of Israel did so. That means they're going to go to Canaan and pick up dad and their families and bring them back. And so Joseph gave them wagons according to the command of Pharaoh and gave them provisions for the journey. Now, Pharaoh is really excited about this. The Pharaoh seems to be a man who just came to power recently, that his dad is the one that first had Joseph as vizier. But then dad died and this new Pharaoh comes, and Joseph is like a dad to him. So this Pharaoh is very excited about Joseph being reunited with his family and says, you send wagons up there so they can ride in comfort. And by the way, let's send special food items that they can enjoy from Egypt on their way back here and make sure they've got plenty of bread and the things that are needed for making meals and other items before they come back here. Because it's about a 2 week or so trip that these guys are going to make. And the wagons are going to make it a lot more comfortable for the families. Now, Joseph, though, is also trying to let his brothers know how special they are to him. So to each of them, he gave a change of clothes. To Benjamin, he gave 300 shekels of silver, which is probably a couple of years' worth of salary, and 5 changes of clothes, because for some reason, Joseph is using a 5 multiplier to show special treatment of his baby brother. And then to his father, he sent the following. 10 donkeys loaded with the good things of Egypt and 10 female donkeys loaded with grain, bread, and provision for his father on the journey. Then, and this is where we closed, he sent his brothers away, and as they departed, he said to them, don't quarrel on the way. Don't get into an argument. Now, why did he say that? Well, he knows that there are going to be recriminations. He knows that the guilt is going to be working on them. And he knows that it's going to really be stirred up by the fact that for the 2 weeks it takes for them to get back home, they're going to have to be rehearsing in their heads and with one another, how do we explain to Dad what we did? You see, they're going to have to fess up. And one of the things, and you're all going to be on board with me on this, one of the things we run into, one of the pitfalls of being confronted with our sin and needing to confess our responsibility, is we often want to drag other people into the same sort of responsibility. And we even like to shift blame. I mean, it started at the very beginning of history. As soon as God says to Adam, so did you eat the fruit that I told you not to eat? The first words out of his mouth, it was that woman that you gave to me. She gave the fruit to me and I ate. So not my fault, her fault, actually your fault, because you gave her to me. So this is the problem. You can't have true repentance unless you're willing to shoulder your own guilt without dragging other people into it. And so the temptation for these guys is going to be that Reuben is going to be, you know, asserting how he said we should only throw him into the pit and let him die with the intention of getting him out of the pit later. And things like that. Well, I'm not quite as guilty as you were guilty. Well, you're the one that tied him up, or you're the one that grabbed him. You're the one that ripped the coat off of him and shredded it up and poured the blood. None of that's going to matter. The only thing that matters is getting this family intact to a safe zone. And so that's what Joseph is saying. Don't you guys argue on the way. You just go and do what needs to happen. And so, verse 25, they went up out of Egypt, and they came to the land of Canaan to their father Jacob. Now, very dramatic here. They told him, Joseph is still alive. Big shock. He's ruler over all the land of Egypt. Second big shock. His heart became numb, for he did not believe them. His thinking process was stunned, right? He was just taken aback, shocked beyond the ability to think coherently, because he would never have expected the first news, Joseph's still alive, let alone the second news, he is the number two guy in Egypt right now. And so he's having a hard time to believe this. Verse 27, but when they told him all the words of Joseph, which he had said to them, and when he saw the wagons, so here are these Egyptian wagons with Egyptian drivers, probably, Egyptian teamsters, you know, taking care of these animals. When he saw the wagons that Joseph had sent to carry him, the spirit of their father revived. So at one moment, he's taken aback, knocked for a loop. But then he sees evidence that this is true. Verse 28, and Israel said, it is enough. Joseph, my son, is still alive. I will go and see him before I die. Wow, what a story. What an amazing turnaround. This man who had said on a couple of occasions, my gray hairs are going to go down to Sheol in grief, in sorrow. I am going to be a man that is mourning until the day I die. And now suddenly, he has a whole new lease on life. Chapter 46. So Israel took his journey with all that he had and came to Beersheba. Now he would probably go past Beersheba anyway on a trip to Egypt from Hebron, kind of cut across, catch the Wadi Road from Beersheba that goes down to the coast, and then follow the coastline down to the delta, and then follow the edge of the delta down to the Nile River proper, and then the short distance from the wrist of the delta down to the capital city. And so about 2 weeks, but he wants to say his goodbyes. I'm guessing that his first goodbye happened at Hebron. It is highly likely that he understood, I will not personally be coming back here again, not in this life. I will die in Egypt. So I think, even though the text doesn't say it, I'm going to just throw my little speculation out there. The first thing he did was go to Cave Machpelah and said goodbye and paid his honors to Grandpa Abraham and Grandma Sarah. And then his goodbyes to Yitzhak and Rebecca, Mom and Dad. And then he goes to Beersheba, the place where apparently he was born. And it says that he offered sacrifices to the God of his father, Yitzhak. It's the final place that his family has regularly used as a tent city location that is on the road to Egypt. So it is kind of the farewell point. So he stops here at the well of the oath, the well of the promise, and worships God in the land. And then God has a chat with him. Because, as you can expect, Jacob Israel is a little bit concerned about the unknown. So verse 2, God spoke to Israel in visions of the night and said, Yaakov, Yaakov. So he doesn't talk to him by his brand new name. God reverts back to the old name, the name that he grew up with, the name that had been kind of definitive of his life until he came back to the promised land. And so he said, here I am. And then he said, I am God. I am Elohim, the God of your father. Do not be afraid to go down to Egypt, for there I will make you into a great nation. So don't be afraid. Don't be nervous. Go down there, because it is there that I will take your family and turn them into a great ethnic group, a large body of people, part of the fulfillment of the promise. They will be numerous, like the stars in the sky and the sand of the sea. And then this promise, verse 4, I myself will go down with you to Egypt. Now that is important because of the cultural thinking of this time period. And I've mentioned this quite a bit because it was quite widespread. And part of it, I think, comes from the idea that the fallen angels kind of passed themselves off as gods, as power beings. But because they are created beings, they could hold sway only over a limited region, a limited area. So it became common thinking among the peoples of the ancient world that gods were of places, spots. They had a power base typically associated with where their image was located or where their main temple building was located. And the farther away you got from that base, the less influence that god or goddess had. Well, Jacob may have been a little bit worried about that, thinking that God is the God of the promised land. Or maybe he's the God of the promised land and the land of my forefathers up at Haran and Ur of the Chaldees. He's the God of those places, but I'm going to Egypt. It has totally different gods. What am I supposed to do? I'm leaving God behind. And you can understand where he might come to that thinking, but it's wrong. And so God lets him know, I'm going to be with you. No matter where you go, I'm there. And I will also bring you up again. Now, not him personally, other than his body. It's a reference to the fact that his name, Yisrael, Israel, is going to be applied to the ethnic group, the people group that he just promised him a moment ago. And Israel, the people group, will be coming back up here under God's direction. And this promise was very special, this last one. And Joseph's hand shall close your eyes. And you've seen this plenty of times, maybe in person, but certainly you've seen it portrayed in media where a person passes away and their body functions completely terminate, and maybe their eyes are left open. And what does the person do? Reaches up and very tenderly and gently pulls their eyelids down so that they look like they're sleeping rather than just staring emptily into space. And so God guarantees to Israel, Joseph, your beloved son that you've thought has been dead for these past 20 years, he'll be the one that you'll be looking to his face when you pass away, when you're gathered to your people. He's the one that'll close your eyes in death. That's a special thing for Israel. So verse 5, Jacob set out from Beersheba. The sons of Israel carried Jacob, their father, their little ones, and their wives in the wagons that Pharaoh had sent to carry them. They also took their livestock, which would have been considerable, their goods, which they had gained in the land of Canaan, which would have been considerable, and they came into Egypt. Now, we're about to see something else that's going to happen here. They are about to go and start living in the Delta region, right along one of the seven streams of the Nile. Very prosperous. They are not going to be Bedouin any longer. They are going to be located persons. They are going to build houses, not live in tents. And they are going to have all the gardens and the agriculture up near where their houses are. The animals that they have, they will graze them in very lush areas there in the Delta. And so their existence is going to change considerably in this move. So they came into the land of Canaan, came into Egypt, Jacob and all his offspring with him, his sons' sons with him, his daughters, his sons' daughters, all his offspring he brought with him into Egypt. And then we need to have kind of a head count. This is thrown into the narrative, a little genealogical list. Now, these are the names of the descendants of Israel who came into Egypt, who came to be in Egypt. Jacob and his sons, Reuben, Jacob's firstborn, the sons of Reuben, Hanak, Palu, Hezron, and Garmi. And so what we're going to see listed here, for the most part, is going to be Jacob's sons and Jacob's grandsons. There will be an instance where great-grandsons are mentioned. So the sons of Simeon, Yemuel, Yamin, Ohad, Yakin, Zohar, and Shahul, the son of a Canaanite woman. The sons of Lewi, Gershon, Kohat, and Merari. These will become very important later for the Israelis who are reading this first time, because these are the Levitical divisions, the groups that take care of the religious aspect of the Israeli nation. The sons of Judah, Onan, Shelah, Perez, Zerah. And you remember, Perez and Zerah are brand new little babies. They are brought into existence because and Onan died in the land of Canaan. You remember the circumstances there, that was just a bad guy, and then Onan is supposed to marry the widow and bring up children with her to He refuses, and then Judah doesn't give Shelah as the next son to Tamar, and so Tamar takes advantage to get pregnant by Judah. And so Perez and Zerah, little bitty babies when they come into Egypt. And then we have listed, though, great-grandkids that don't get born until they've been in Egypt for a while. But they are listed because this list highlights, in particular, the Judah line, because this is going to become the line of leadership. And so the later ones that will be born and who have a special status as the names of clans or family groups inside of Israel are Hezron and Hamul. The sons of Issachar, Tola, Hua, Yob, and Shimron. Sons of Zebulun, Sered, Elon, Yahil. These are the sons of Leah, whom she bore to Jacob in Paddan Aram, together with his daughter Dinah. Altogether, his sons and his daughters numbered 33. The sons of Gad, Ziphion, Haggai, Suni, Esbon, Eri, Eridi, and Ereli. The sons of Asher, Imna, Ishva, Ishvi, Beria, with Sarah, their sister. And the sons of Beria, Heber, and Malkiel. So we got a little bit of a grandson action going on here too. These are the sons of Zilpah, whom Laban gave to Leah, his daughter, and she bore to Jacob 16 persons. Sons of Rachel, Jacob's wife, Joseph and Benjamin. To Joseph in the land of Egypt were born Manasseh and Ephraim, whom Asenath, the daughter of Potipherah, the priest of On, bore to him. And then we have the sons of Benjamin. Now, Benjamin is only 21 years of age. So it is unlikely that all of these boys were born before he came to Egypt, but they are sons in Egypt of that next generation. So they are listed here. Bila, Biker, Ashbel, Gira, Naaman, Iha, Ihi, or Ehi, Rosh, Mupim, Hupim, and Ard. These are the sons of Rachel who were born to Jacob, 14 persons in all. And then the sons of Dan, Hushim, the sons of Naphtali, Jaziel, Guni, Jezer, and Shalim. These are the sons of Bilhah, whom Laban gave to Rachel, his daughter, and these she bore to Jacob, 7 persons in all. Now, all of that list is put in place because these are the chief names of the families and clans that are reading this. The people coming out of Egypt all have genealogical tie-ins that they can identify on this list. And so all the persons belonging to Jacob who came into Egypt, who were his own descendants, not including Jacob's sons' wives, were 66 persons in all. And the sons of Joseph who were born to him in Egypt were 2. And all the persons of the house of Jacob who came into Egypt were 70. Additional 2 were those that died in Canaan because of their sinfulness. And so that's how you come to the number 70 as being important in Jewish history and in Jewish culture, because there were 70 distinct clans or families of the Israelis. And so when they formulate their Sanhedrin, it is made up of 70 leaders. And when they translate the Bible from Hebrew into Greek, they use 72, which is 6 people from each of the 12 tribes, in order to make that text. So 70 is a really big number for the Israelis.